Michelle Biniak, Editorial Director of Promax, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Today, drawn from our latest Promax virtual session, we have Lydia Daly, Senior Vice President, and Mary-Kate Cullen, Senior Director at ViacomCBS Creative Strategy and Cultural Intelligence. The pair is presenting a session called All the Feels, which offers some different lenses through which marketers can view and approach the very emotional generation known as Gen Z, which for the purposes of this presentation are young people aged 12 to 24. One caveat, not everything in this presentation is necessarily appropriate for the younger side of Gen Z, and aside from the talk of TikTok, they probably won't be interested anyway. At the end, that's Promax CEO Steve Kazanjian that you hear jumping back in to close, and if you would like to watch this presentation as opposed to listen to it, a video is available with this podcast post on brief.promax.org. Okay, take it away, Lydia.
I am Lydia Daly, as mentioned. I lead the Creative Strategy and Cultural Intelligence team at Velocity at Viacom. So Velocity is an in-house branded content agency. Mary-Kate is the senior director on my team. She's going to be taking us through a lot of the insights a little bit later on. Creative strategy for us, of course, is infusing insights into all of our RFPs, into the content that we create for our partners. And then cultural intelligence, I'll explain a little bit more deeply because you're about to see a presentation of cultural intelligence. So for us, we're interested in studying what is at the intersection of what matters and what is happening in culture and what matters for marketers. And increasingly, particularly during the times that we're in right now, we find that most things that are happening in culture, and by that we mean the content that people are creating, what they're sharing, the things that they're interested in, how they speak to one another, is important to marketers, as we don't have as much control of that kind of top-down approach that we used to have in the past. So for us, we love this quote, making a study of consumers without reference to culture is like making a study of fish without reference to the sea. So even though we believe in and use more traditional research studies, for us, a piece of data can be a stat that you find in a large quantitative study that you do. But a piece of data could also be an Instagram post that you saw in your feed, or it could be the latest thing that is trending on TikTok or a snap that somebody is sharing. So we want to look at that in the most broad sense possible. But it is not all just about being on TikTok nonstop. We also have some science to what we do. So we're using all the tools of the trade. So from what you're going to see today, there definitely is qual and quant involved. We love semiotics. If you're not familiar, it's the study of visual language, of signs, of symbols, of colors, of pictures. All of those things can be signals into what a trend might be or an insight about a particular audience or thing. We hack social and tools for cultural intelligence. So a lot of the tools that we were previously using more just for social media measurement, we are now using to socially listen and understand conversations and pick up on trends and pick up on where things are going in culture. And then lastly, we study it our way. We've created a trend practice at Velocity where we have created a set of rules around what is a trend, what is a signal, what is a micro trend, so that we're not using all of those terms loosely and that there is some sort of science behind what we do. And we offer a workshop on how to find trends also for our partners. Here are some sample studies. I'm not going to go through them. We're here to take you through one in particular. We take all of these studies to conferences and webinars like this, but we also take them to partners and to advertisers and to agencies. So if you are interested and you feel like your team could benefit from this, then don't hesitate to reach out to us. But we're going today to talk about all the feels. We're hopefully going to decode youth and help you understand everything to do with particularly TikTok, since Gen Z are somewhat obsessed, as are Mary-Kate and I, for research purposes. And what better way to start a presentation about Gen Z than with a montage of TikTok clips? So let's take a peek at that.
Feelings are a hard thing to figure out sometimes. Sometimes you don't know what you feel, but...
Oh my God.
I'm not afraid anymore. What makes you sure you're all I need?
My girl, you know.
Unmotivational Monday.
We're all headed towards a global extinction, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yo!
I don't want to go to school tomorrow. I can study thinking about you. And you know I always do.
Are you okay?
No.
Oh, I'm depressed. Oh, sorry.
I'm just like sad, but I'm like okay with it.
you've never been on TikTok, you can now say you've seen all the best bits. Just a little bit on methodology for this particular study. There is qual and quant, as mentioned. We've leaned heavily on semiotics and culture tracking for this, and there was a series of expert interviews. If anyone needs more information on methodology, we will be sure to give it. But I just wanted you to understand and be aware that there was the science part and that there are numbers and stats against this, but then also those kind of cultural data points that I spoke about to underpin everything. So some generational context. We're talking about Gen Z. Please give us some creative license when we say Gen Z. Gen Z right now, if we were to be scientific about it, covers a large cohort down to very young in age. We're talking about people who are in elementary school, and we are not looking at kids that young when we talk about this study. We're using Gen Z to denote youth. So we're looking at 12 to 24, even though some of that encapsulates some younger millennials. But just taking us back, baby boomers, post-war era, Gen X at the forefront of pop culture, millennials, avocados, snowflakes, all the things. But today we're going to talk about Gen Z and a few things when we start talking about Gen Z that people think the presentation is going to be about is VSCO girls. If you don't know what a VSCO girl is, here is an image of a starter pack that is available to you. This is a fashion trend amongst Gen Z females. These are the staples of the trade. You can wear all of these things. Crocs I find interesting. You should know the Crocs are fashionable. Ariana Grande wore them last summer, so it's definitely a thing that's not going away. Scrunchies for your hair, for your wrist, for your ankle, for anywhere you can put a scrunchie. You are nailing the trend if you include them in your look. Hydro flasks to carry your water. Secondly, you might think we're going to talk a lot about OK Boomer. We are not, but this is our favorite example. This is a member of parliament in New Zealand who, when an older gentleman questioned her on her climate change policies, just stopped and said, OK Boomer, and then continued. Perfect usage. Many other examples are available. Started on TikTok. Speaking of which, blinding lights, you might think we're going to talk about the numerous dance challenges that are on TikTok right now. Blinding Lights is one, Savage is another, Renegade was another. It is nonstop. It is blowing up on quarantine when people not just enter their own and upload their own dance challenges, but include their parents, their grandparents, their dogs, their children. And here's one example to give you so you know what Blinding Lights is. So although we are going to feature a lot of TikTok in this, the presentation is not just about TikTok. Twitch, you might think another thing that we hear a lot about Gen Z, that they're obsessed with online gaming, but not actually online gaming, just being online, watching other people online game. Again, not something we're going to go into, but an important trend within Gen Z, I would say. And then also, to get our minds in the context of Gen Z, if we were to believe everything we read, this generation is the most anxious, the loneliest, the saddest, the most depressed, the most suicidal. And you see a lot of news articles there on your screen that are kind of pushing that out there. And then on the flip side, it's quite confusing because they're also being touted as the most hopeful, the most entrepreneurial. They're the change makers. They're unique. They're unapologetic. All of these positive things. And so we feel that it is confusing, and the key to understanding them is actually through their emotions. And so for the first time, we feel this is a generation that can be decoded entirely through the way that they speak online. There is a taxonomy of memes and content that they share and that they create and the way that they interact with each other within social media, that once you decode it, you can understand a lot and you can kind of infer trends from that. And that's what this presentation is going to take you through, including helping you understand things like this.
Oh, hi. Thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
So as we were decoding the emotions of Gen Z, three rose to the top. So the first one is angst. The second is trust, and the third is confidence. And we're gonna tease these out and go into them a bit more deeply. We like to point out that people probably see this slide and think, oh, they're gonna do a presentation about young adults and teenagers and tell me they're angsty. Isn't that obvious? And yes, it is. But what is different about the generation today is that this stat explains it well. 61% agree I have more anxiety than someone should at my age. So while teenagers were always angsty and always have been, they've not had the vocabulary and the confidence to speak about that. They've not felt okay with it, and they haven't had the words to be able to articulate it. And that is what we're seeing as a difference with Gen Z. Secondly, 86% of 13 to 24-year-olds describe themselves as cautious, not something you would typically think about when you're thinking about teenagers. You think of them as risk takers, not so with Gen Z. And then lastly, 83% describing themselves as confident. Again, not speaking from personal experience, as a 15-year-old, confidence was not a trait I would have used to describe myself. And we feel brands are starting to scratch the surface. So this idea of understanding and leaning into feelings and emotions, some brands are starting to create campaigns that get this somewhat right. So Burger King, their No One Is Happy All The Time campaign, taking a stab at McDonald's. Gillette, I think some people love this and some people hate this, but the Boys Will Be Boys campaign definitely was leaning into this trend. And then lastly, Sprite is another good example. So they created a Reddit campaign to help young people cope with their loneliness. So some brands are starting to see this as an opportunity. However, we think there's still more that they could be doing. So they can go deeper to understand how these emotions could be expressed today. And that is what we are about to go through. I will say, just before I hand over to Mary Kate to go through the different emotions, we are going to have questions. Feel free to ask them at any point. We'll probably stop at the end of each section and go through a few questions if we have any. Usually when we're doing this presentation, it is in a room. It is extremely interactive. So it's always awkward for us talking into the abyss like this and just seeing each other's faces. So feel free to interact in the chat. But I'll hand over to Mary Kate.
Great. So we talked about these three emotional spaces, angst, trust, and confidence. And the way we're going to go through each of these is to talk about what are the cultural expressions of those today. We're calling the first one playful nihilism, which should give you a sense of the tension that exists there. The second around DIY devotion, and the third one around being radically real. So the first of playful nihilism is about dealing with the angst. And this is a generation who's feeling really overwhelmed with the world. This is something that I think has been true for a while, but I think we can all now relate to them even more as we're all checking our phones first thing in the morning, much like Gen Z. And 79% of this cohort is really having trouble blocking out the bad news. So the way that they're dealing with this angst and this overwhelm and this feeling of perhaps we're going to destroy the planet or perhaps we're going to save it is coping mechanisms that are really light, absurd, and nonsensical. And so one expression, the first one here, is what we're calling embracing the absurd. So thinking about Gen Z and the way that they express themselves, particularly online, is they're really finding comfort in these things that don't make any sense because the world doesn't really make any sense to them right now. We heard Luke in our Gen Z lab say, our humor actually makes no sense, but it also makes so much sense. There's a sense of collective language around growing up online and sort of speaking social media in that way. And so we see tons of examples of these absurdist ways of expressing themselves. We read an article early in the conversations around this microtrend talking about how the Dadaist art movement in Europe really came about in a period of time where it was a really chaotic time in world history. And so this is sort of the digital Dadaism of our time. So examples of this are the Shell On Challenge, which is in the bottom corner. You see teenagers kind of taking a stab at the idea of, do you eat your cereal or your orange with the shell on, trying to shock people into understanding. They're sort of creating a joke out of the Tide Pod Challenge of a couple of years ago and shocking people. We also see examples like this sort of mukbang approach. So if you know what mukbang is, it's eating tremendous amounts of food usually in front of YouTube as a sort of community and collectiveness spirit. And we see this absurd version of that, which you guys can all tell us in the chat if you feel relaxed by or perhaps horrified by. Let us know. Just so you know, they are edible. Sort of that ASMR element. I'm always curious whether people feel more relaxed or more horrified. So please tell us. It seems mostly horrified, but there's a definite contingent who are into it. The second example here is around appropriating anxiety. And this is really the angst and saying it out loud. So we're seeing this across music and fashion and more, where we're destigmatizing the idea of anxiety and really making it cool. As Lydia mentioned, talking about mental health and having the vocabulary for it is a tremendous difference today. So teens are feeling anxious after 3 hours a day on social media. I can't imagine the volume, as screen time rules have gone out the window and we're all spending more time on our phones. So we see cultural manifestations of this from a Gucci runway show where you are carrying severed heads down the runway, to pop stars like Poppy, who's screaming into the void here, Rina Sawayama, who is making shiny pop songs about ambient dread. So really positive, bubbly sounds mixed with anxiety-ridden lyrics. So just destigmatizing it, making it okay, talking about it out loud. And here's another example from TikTok that perhaps you'll recognize some of the music. Just the depth of language, vocabulary, and expression of that is so interesting to us. The next example, we're getting into a darker and darker space, but we're going to come out on the other side and we're going to have a brain break soon. So this next example and expression is around mortality as the new stand-up. So they're not acknowledging death as something to fear, but something to make fun of. And this is certainly a coping mechanism, as many teens and young adults have come up through, for example, hearing about climate change being an existential threat in their lifetime, going through 95% of schools when they were open, were doing lockdown drills where there were a lot of questions about whether this was more traumatizing or preparing our students. And we see sort of more lighthearted examples as well, you know, on Tumblr. Imagine a horror movie where all the characters are Gen Z and the killer calls and they said, all right, Lit, hurry up though. When your ex is drowning and you high five them on the way down. Some disturbing trends around stop juuling, where teenagers are really understanding that vaping is bad for them, but are acknowledging the difficulty they have in stopping. And this example represents what we were talking about before about the school shootings and how horrifying that is for students who are thinking about this in the back of their minds, but are dealing with it in these absurdist ways. The next expression is around disrupting the dystopia. So similarly, dealing with these dark realities that they're facing, but trying to, you know, manifest them in these absurd, nihilistic ways, but also to help make change, right? To sort of try and get those expressions to move something forward. So one example we have here is a series of young women last year were doing an interpretive dance to their voicemails of their ex-boyfriends that were highly abusive. They were interviewed by The Cut and they said, I think it's good for girls to see these relationships, to see that it sucks and it'll feel better when you're on your way out. So really taking these horrible realities, but showing them and performing to them to let people know that they too can be better off without them. I'll show this. This one's a hard one.
Whenever the fuck you want to wear it and act like that shit's not disrespectful at all. I'm not dating someone who's got every fucking dude at the school looking at her. You want to do that? Don't fucking be with me.
So that's one example. And then more recently, you know, we've seen reactions to the global pandemic. We saw, for example, these twins, I'll show you this video, who were creating sort of using the popular music and dance kind of memery of TikTok to talk about real challenges of shutting down schools and homelessness. And they've created a series of videos that express their realities in a way that help people understand the sort of true cost of the pandemic. So you can imagine just things that when you or I were growing up, perhaps were not things we were all talking about as openly. Now is the part where we get a brain break. So congratulations, you made it to the end of that disturbing piece of the presentation. And this is really about the reaction, right? So if we're in the overwhelm and there's so many expressions of that, we're also finding that Gen Z, being mentally exhausted, are looking for escape and ways to escape into these meaningless, mindless pleasures. So examples like chill steady beats during the coronavirus, or hand washing videos that are ASMR and very relaxing, or we love this McDonald's piece of film that is just endlessly soothing while it makes you want a egg sandwich, which is a feat I did not know could be achieved. So for brands, when we think about what this all means, what does playful nihilism mean, and how does this sense of humor and the way that teens and young adults are really communicating with each other apply for brands? We think there's an opportunity to think about this in two ways. Do you want to help your Gen Z consumers check into these emotions or check out from them? So a couple of examples here. Checking in, a great example would be Snapchat's Here For You feature is providing support within the app for those who are searching for anxiety or depression related topics. So they're immediately sort of addressing the emotions that they're seeing their customer base feeling and trying to immediately discuss, remedy, address that. We're also seeing an opportunity for people to address and celebrate the painful triumphs of today. So thinking about P&G's distance dance with Charlie D'Amelio, that kind of created the reality and that we're all in this together, but created an opportunity for everyone to participate in this distance dance. And then John Krasinski, we love the Some Good News YouTube channel that has just launched, highlighting the realities of today, but also putting a bright and human spin on the painful time that we're all living in. On the flip side, we see the opportunity really to help your consumers check out. So creating moments for escape, Nike telling their customers to think about how play responds now that sports are all canceled and we can't all participate in sport together. So how do you remix the way that we play for today's world? And then the last one is Adidas Powered by the Past. So they're looking at the new silhouettes for their shoes and have a really interesting piece of film that goes along with it that taps into sort of a nostalgia aesthetic. For the teens and young adults today, they didn't grow up in the 80s and 90s, but that aesthetic of, as we saw with the Visco Girls or with some of the bright and neon imagery that we see, there's just this comfort in a past that they didn't live through the socio and political strife of that time. So have sort of a comfort with that period of time as an aesthetic reference. So we'll pause here. If there are any questions or reactions to this section, I'm curious if anybody on the chat was more shocked by the mukbang, edible mukbang, or by the teenager voicemails, abusive voicemails. So let us know your reaction and if there's any questions before we move on to the next section.
I think the reactions that we have are the most perfect encapsulation of the reactions that we usually get, where it's gone from funny to horrified to weird. Accurate. There is one question, Mary Kate. Some of these expressions are pretty provocative. What are the easiest or safest ways for brands to engage this target? We've had that one before.
So we think brain breaks is a pretty easy one for brands to take advantage of because it has a lot of opportunity for just kind of letting people escape. Some of the complicated humor of Gen Z can be hard for a brand to get right. But if you want to go into more of that checking in side, we think that there's opportunity for co-creation with young people who are really comfortable, playing that role of co-creation with a brand. So that if brands are wanting to kind of play with this humor or this absurdity, some brands have a history of that, like Skittles is great at that. But if you are less comfortable, there may be an opportunity if you want to go on the check-in side that you do it more with a partner.
Right. And it's worth pointing out, most advertisers we take this through get very excited at the McDonald's example, because if you examine it, you will see that it's literally a product demonstration that we are telling them Gen Z like and want and need. So anyone can make a video like that, which is why brain breaks are so appealing, I would say.
So the next section is about trust. So we talked about how trust really across the board, this is not going to be news to any of you, is tumbling downward for traditional institutions, from government to religion to traditional authority figures. So we're seeing a change for Gen Z and thinking about how they find trust and truth in an uncertain world. So they're looking at perhaps not as much at traditional religion. About a third of Gen Z say they don't have a religion, but instead are looking at remixing and hacking and upgrading to find their own generation's sense of meaning, whether that's cosmic playlists or following Kanye's Sunday service. The first cultural expression of this is this idea of ideals over idols. So right now in the age of cancel culture, it's become really useless to idolize a person and put them on a pedestal, because chances are they are an imperfect human who may be taken down with various levels of receipts. So we're seeing this opportunity that Gen Z is thinking about of looking inward. We heard from Gabrielle in our Gen Z lab, as for someone that I look up to, I have this idealized version of myself that I'm striving for. When we spoke to young people within the Gen Z labs, they talked about cycling through a number of different people that perhaps different attributes of those people could make up a perfect person to look up to. But we're really struggling and wanted to think about it in terms of the best version of themselves. So we see examples like me and my higher self cloning herself in a book of memes to share sort of how her idealized version of herself would move forward. And it's just another example. We're seeing tons of it right now of kind of what influencer 3.0 will look like, as some of the more traditional influencers who were all about aspiration, like Ariel Charnas, who really became a poster child for celebrity privilege during the pandemic, and how that's really shifting ideals over idols. The second expression is around the idea of mixing and matching spirituality. So finding your own truth through trial and error, and also a combination of traditional and non-traditional approaches. So Casper from Harvard Divinity School that we spoke to said, you're not going to one institution anymore to get your meaning making. Gen Z still believes in a spirituality and a higher power, but they're finding it in different, maybe unexpected places. Things like plant-based medicines and ayahuasca becoming much more mainstream. The documentary Leia and I explored two Gen Z girls who traveled the world to understand both finding their own spirituality and plant-based medicines that really worked for them. Dharma punks, who are punk rockers who become Buddhist monks. Rage yoga, which I feel like we should all try and find the online version of now. Or things that are a little bit more pop culture, like the CoStar app that has become tremendously popular, that will give you guidance from everything to work and relationships via your astrological sign. So looking for guidance and sort of that sense of something else guiding you, but not in a traditional format, or even a beginner witch kit from Sephora. We're also seeing a reinvention of rituals and finding new rituals. So much of what traditional faith and religion has given us is this idea of ritual, and we're seeing holidays and celebrations really getting a change up. So we know that for young people, their sense of identity is embedded not only with their ethnicity or where they've come from, but also in their hobbies and interests. So seeing that expressing itself in various different ways. Looking at things like the influx of baking for anxiety, sort of the stress baking phenomenon that is happening right now, and how that's becoming a coping mechanism and really a new ritual for people to deal with the pandemic. This goes beyond Gen Z, as you might imagine. Also seeing April Fool's Day, which clearly had to be canceled this year because we just couldn't take anything else crazy happening. And then even something like period parties, which I'll let this video explain what it is.
She was like, I need you to go to the store and get supplies. I'm throwing a period party tonight. You never heard of this?
Period?
No, why would I?
You never heard of this?
I've never heard of that.
Dude, this is real. This is real. She goes, Dad, I'm throwing a period party. I'm like, yo, I'm like, what's that? She goes, I need you to go to the store and get a red velvet cake. I'm like, dude, all the girls are throwing them, Dad. Red velvet cake and icing so we can name my period.
I don't know if anyone has heard of a period party before, maybe thrown one for someone. Our favorite part of the video is the, you know, middle-aged white men being like, I don't know what this is. So that is some examples of really remixing and finding new ways, breaking taboos and creating new rituals. Much like the first section in Brain Breaks, we see a reaction here as well, where religion is starting to be upgraded to be a bit more culturally forward. So knowing that Gen Z in particular is looking for a more open, accepting universe across the board, we're seeing faith of traditional functions starting to acknowledge that. So whether that is hype priests that look more like Justin Bieber than a traditional man of the cloth, or Passover seders and Easter being done over Zoom, TikTok being taken over by the Amish, or books of the Bible that look like kinfolk magazines on the bottom. And then finally, Exit Here, which is a pop-up shop that look is a funeral home that looks more like a pop-up shop, I should say. So what does all of this mean for brands? We see, you know, surprisingly thinking about this as a trust or religion kind of idea, it's surprising that you might be able to find some insights for brands, but we think there's actually tons. The first in this sort of idea of ideals over idols is promoting self-love. So thinking about the idea that Gen Z is looking inside themselves and having brands really recognize that self-love. Thinks, as an example, hired Alana Glazer to talk about self-care and acceptance of the female body. Thinks there's tons of opportunities for brands who have been focused more on the outside to think about how to promote self-love, particularly for Gen Z on the inside. The next example, I think, relates to a lot of brands who have had a history of spokespeople. And thinking about shifting that emphasis from celebrating impact to from celebrating the icon. So in the past, it was Be Like Mike, and it was about sort of that person on the pedestal. But how do we shift that to talk about what are the attributes that we find remarkable about that person? What impact have they made on their community? Budweiser and Dwayne Wade, we think, is a beautiful example of celebrating Dwayne Wade's legacy, not as a sports star, but as someone who made a tremendous impact within his family, within his community, within people he didn't even know, and using that as an opportunity to really celebrate him. The next example is about creating those new rituals, those new moments of celebration. We thought the recent T-Mobile Give Thanks, Not Pranks, April Fool's Day promotion was really interesting. Donating $1 to the Boys and Girls Club for anyone who, you know, participated in that hashtag was a nice way of recreating a ritual and a moment in a way that the brand could create some space for others. And the last example is kind of in that DIY spirituality world, Headspace partnering with New York and Governor Cuomo to give free meditations to New Yorkers who clearly at the epicenter of this crisis would need it right now more than ever. So we'll pause there. I don't know if we've had any other questions come through or reactions or feelings.
Yeah, but,
polls on the period party is open as well.
Okay, so we have had a question in relation to, not directly, but in relation to the period party. And it was, do we imagine that these Gen Z behaviors, such as period parties, will translate to other older generations? So I think obviously period parties can't necessarily translate to an older generation. However, we speak about the fact often that whatever cohort is coming into power, and by power I mean which is the biggest generation, the generation with the biggest spending power, the kind of up-and-coming generation that tends to be setting the trends, older generations always pick up on that eventually. So the same way as millennials seemed like something other and different maybe 5-10 years ago, now everybody is living their life in the way a millennial would have typically lived their life. And the same is going to be said for Gen Z. I know it's taking quarantine for it to happen, and I am going to mention TikTok again, but even just in the uptake of a brand new platform that's entirely come from Gen Z, and now you're seeing all different age groups on it. And that's just one example. I don't know if you've got more, Mary Kate, or anything else to add to that.
I mean, if your mom is memeing, you know that this is a phenomenon. And I would say the interesting thing to me, and this is something I was thinking about in the last last couple of days is just whether the multi-generationalness of people kind of being locked down in their homes over the last several weeks is leading to an acceleration of this behavior. Like, I see so much more playful nihilism in the posts of moms that it sort of makes me think that some of the humor, some of the behavior is really even accelerating, as we always talk about that tip of the spear mentality of it feeds into other generations eventually. I wonder whether the pandemic phenomenon is really accelerating some of that.
Yeah, that's definitely making moms more crazy.
We'll give a test too. Great. So the last section is the shortest section, and it's called Radical Realness, really centering around that idea of confidence. And thinking about this generation, Gen Z, as the children of the Rage Against the Machine Gen X generation, you can kind of see how they grew up thinking about living in sort of a backlash mentality. So right now we're seeing a real backlash against perfection and what's considered authentic or what's considered aspirational. The millennials that we mentioned before perfected that perfect latte shot, the perfect avocado toast shot, and just the filtered version of our lives. And for Gen Z, they really want to break taboos and celebrate things that are against the norm. So this is a little bit of a different reaction and a way of feeling confident in themselves. They see themselves as more opening and accepting of other generations. They realize that perfection is impossible and are more likely to be accepting of some realness. Looking at the first cultural manifestation of this, we see as bare it all. So authenticity is sort of losing its meaning by proxy of the fact that the people who said they were being true and genuine then reveal the Instagram versus reality. And so we're seeing a lot more young people turn to revealing the truth, the warts and alls, even the scary and embarrassing bits. 71% of the sort of older edge of this cohort of 16 to 24 say, I'm proud of who I am and I'm not afraid to express myself. We see cultural examples of this, like Euphoria saying that nudes are the currency of love now and that they need to be stopped shaming for that. We saw Bella Hadid release her nudes to own that. Nikki Tutorials was being blackmailed and decided to, instead of sort of letting them win, own her coming out as trans in a way that she could be proud of the way that she was going to express herself to her fans. We see examples like the Naked Philanthropist, and it's only a matter of time before there's another Naked Philanthropist around the COVID pandemic, but this had to do with the Australian fires, where she was offering anyone who donated at least $10 and could prove it, she would send a nude back to them as a DM. So seeing lots of literal bearing it all in addition to emotional bearing it all. We're also seeing an expression of kind of glorifying the idea of bad, traditionally known as bad behavior, because it's become a proxy for what is genuine and what is real. 82% of 16 to 24 is saying, I embrace genuineness and don't want to pretend to be something that I'm not. Some examples of this would be this sort of disturbing phenomenon of young men with face tattoos. Although some of the face tattoos, for example, the gentleman in the middle saying things that are not, you know, sort of scary. Nice, with an exclamation point and a heart. Throwing food at various political figures is being celebrated. Something that could only happen in Portland, Boober Eats, a strip club owner keeping his dancers and kitchen staff employed with topless delivery, or, you know, the queen of bad, Cardi B, whether she's throwing a shoe or she's on the cover of Vogue, she is herself no matter what. Or talking to Bernie Sanders. And the last expression here is really a reaction to this idea of radical realness and wanting to create an opportunity for wins out of failure. So just much more transparency in sharing of failure and in celebration of failure. The hashtag epic fail garnered 1.3 million posts on Instagram. We see examples like Andy King, who was infamous in the Fyre Festival for willing to do anything. For an Evian. Evian took advantage of this and signed him onto a deal. We see someone like Bad Baby, who was the Cash Me Outside meme girl, if you're familiar. She said Cash Me Outside, she became a meme. Most people who become memes then disappear into obscurity, but she actually managed to turn that into a win for herself and sign a $1 million publishing music deal. And by some accounts, not all, the music is not that bad. We saw the Cardi B coronavirus TikTok she did got turned into a remix and hit the iTunes top 10. The Kardashians are infamous for turning fails into wins. The crying Kim meme became so popular they decided to trademark a Kimmoji. And something like MedMen in sort of a brand space confronting the industry's dark past and more of a serious space, knowing that as a cannabis company, they need to deal with the fact that the industry at large had largely been hurting marginalized people. We'll show a little bit of that video.
Hey, you want to witness some history? Okay, back in the day, George and a few of our founding fathers had hemp farms. Yeah, a president grew his own. Look it up. It was normal. But you know what isn't normal? America's 80 years of unjust prohibition, which hasn't made us any safer. And then there's this. They came up with policies like stop and frisk, where anyone can get searched at any... All right, I'm getting a little off track, but the point is... these punishments have been harsh. Like 25 years in a prison, harsh. That's madness.
If you haven't seen that video, it's definitely worth a watch. So what does all of this mean for brands? There's a couple of examples here. One is to be more bold and unapologetic yourself as a brand, being more fearless. Harmless Harvest was criticized for being a really expensive coconut water brand, somewhere between $7 and $15, depending on the size. And so they addressed this criticism head on by saying, Harmless is expensive. Having fair prices, having fair practices, having organic coconut is all very expensive, and that is how they dealt with that criticism. Influencers over influencers, thinking about allowing your brand to utilize the people who care about it. One example here is Coca-Cola turning over its social handles to philanthropic organizations to avoid the perception of self-promotion during coronavirus, which was a really interesting expression. And then, you know, turning fails into wins, it's a really hard time for a lot of brands and a lot of brands dealing with the fact that you cannot go into their stores. So to deal with that, a ton of brands, including West Elm and Taco Bell, put out conference call video backgrounds in the wake of everyone moving to home-based employment as much as possible. So in terms of the takeaways for brands all in, playful nihilism, we think there's an opportunity to help Gen Z find those meaningful or mindless ways to navigate these complicated realities. DIY devotion, creating inspiring solutions in spaces where Gen Z can nurture their own purpose and passion, and radical realness, really moving beyond authenticity, which has really lost its meaning now, and being open and radical in your own ways.
Thank you, Mary Kate. So one question on the last section that we've had is about influencers and whether we think that since the, there's so much negativity about influencers during quarantine, and we're saying in this presentation that Gen Z don't believe in influencers. Do we think that that as a business is dead and that brands shouldn't be using them?
I wouldn't say that Gen Z doesn't believe in influencers. That's definitely not true. I think there's been a lot of backlash against the tone-deaf celebrity and influencer sort of mega famous who are Ellen talking about the fact that she's in jail and is in a mansion. Didn't strike the right tone. But YouTube influencers, Instagram influencers, TikTok influencers are still huge and important, and who Gen Z is really looking for the kind of either entertainment and escape or the information that they're looking for. So I would say the influencer business is likely going through some changes right now as everyone needs to sort of match the tonality, the appropriate tonality of today. And, like a travel influencer needs to figure out what they're going to be thinking and talking about and what value they're adding in this moment. So there are places where I think it'll be harder for some of those influencers to find their footing. But there's some places like a Mr. Beast, for example, who has always done tons of philanthropic work, tons of work that focuses on impact, has had a tremendous impact in Gen Z, who will come out even stronger on the other side of this. So I think it just depends on the style of influencer we're talking about and the way that they engage over the next couple of weeks and months and to see how they kind of come out on the other side. But we feel, you know, we do a lot of work in that space and feel like there's still tremendous opportunity. There's shifts probably to more cooking and dancing and exercising than there was travel and movies and restaurants, but still tons of opportunity there.
And I would add, our talent team always talks about how it's always the sensational stories that rise to the top and the negativity is what gets press headlines. So that's what we're seeing. But from all our social listening, we're seeing that influencers are still as popular as ever. If anyone else...
I'm on social media, so...
Yeah, well, yes, yeah. And actually, they also say it's much easier to get celebrities and influencers to work for brands right now because they're not doing anything else. Okay, well, that's it. That brings us to an end, unless anybody has any other questions. Thank you all for your time.
Hey guys, how are you? Lydia, Mary Kate, thank you so much. I was just sitting here just enwrapped in it. It seems to me that this generation is more self-secure than any generation that has come before it. And I find that amazing based on the data that you're showing. Thank you guys for today. Really appreciate it. I hope everyone who's listening pulled out some nuggets as you go and develop your own marketing campaigns. I want to thank our sponsors, Definition 6, for bringing this member level content to the whole community. And if you have any suggestions for a session, email connect@promax.org or reach out to me directly. Stay safe, everyone, and I'll see you all next week. Thank you once again, Lydia.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, questions, or ideas for conversations, please feel free to reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.